Good morning, everyone. I would like to welcome all of you to Credicorp Limited Fourth Quarter 2021 conference call. We now have all our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star then one on your telephone keypad. If you have connected to the call using the HD web phone on your computer, please use the keypad on your computer screen. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. With us today is Gianfranco Ferrari, Chief Executive Officer, Cesar Rios, Chief Financial Officer, Francesco Raffo, Chief Innovation Officer, Rinaldo Llosa, Chief Risk Officer, Diego Covero, Head of Universal Banking, Cesar Rivera, Head of Insurance and Pensions, and Milagros Ciguenas, Investor Relations Officer. And now, it is my pleasure to turn the conference over to Credicorp's Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Cesar Rios. Mr. Rios, you may begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome to Credicorp's conference call on our earnings result for the fourth quarter of 2021. I hope you and your families are healthy. The latest available official data shows that economic activity grew 3.5% year-over-year in November and 1.3% compared to the figure reported in November 2019. Our estimates indicate that in the fourth quarter of 2021, the economy expanded around 3.3% year-over-year and 1.8% in the benchmark comparison with 2019. Consequently, Peru's real GDP rebounded around 13% in 2021, which was better than initially expected in a context marked by record highs for copper prices, expansive monetary policy and fiscal policies, and high liquidity, both internationally and locally. Regarding the sanitary situation, Omicron daily infections have increased rapidly and are currently at levels of four times higher than in the peak of the previous wave. Mortality rates, however, are significantly lower. In fact, daily deaths in Peru represent just two-tenths of those registered at the previous wave peak. This evolution reflects the progress of Peru vaccination program, through which 84% of the population, 12 and older, has received at least two doses. If mortality rates stay low, the economic impact of new COVID-19 wave should be limited to an uptick in employee absenteeism and supply chain delays. More sweeping impacts such as lockdowns are not expected. Next slide, please. Inflation has reared its head across the globe, driven by shortages of inputs, problems with supply chain, and increases in international prices for oil, metals, and grain commodities. This inflationary environment puts pressure on central banks around the world. With regards to Peru, consumer inflation is expected to stand at 3% at the end of 2022 versus 6.4% at the end of 2021. In this context, Peru will capitalize on the designation of a team of highly regarded professionals as central bank governors. This new board, led by Julio Velarde, is expected to effectively steer the central bank's policies to control inflation. Accordingly, the central bank has raised its policy rate by 275 basis points as follows. This rate currently stands at 3% and we expect additional increases. Other measures adopted included increasing in bank reserve requirements. Regarding the exchange rate, its recent decline was driven by reduced perception of political uncertainty and a record trade surplus. This decline will also have an impact in slowing down inflation in 2022. Moreover, net international reserves stand at $78 billion at the beginning of February, which is close to its record high. The aforementioned factors, coupled with a fast decline in the fiscal deficit, which went from representing 8.9% of GDP in 2020 to 2.6% in 2021, has eased concerns and reflected in less volatility of Peru's sovereign long-term bond rates. Finally, on the political side, President Castillo has yet to appoint a new cabinet as the last prime minister resigned after just 4 days in office. Political instability lingers in Peru, but our economic fundamentals remain strong. Next slide, please. In Credicorp, we continue to foster financial inclusion and business growth while we consolidate our return to profitability. In 2021, we included over 1 million individuals in the financial systems of Peru, Colombia, and Bolivia. Furthermore, over 5 million individuals and microbusinesses have benefited from ABC, our financial education program at BCP and Pacifico. In the fourth quarter of 2021, our multi-channel distribution model continued to evolve. By year-end, digital transactions at BCP accounted for 51% of total transactions and 44% of disbursements at Mibanco were executed through alternative channels. Our anticipation of client needs and fast tracking of investments on the digital front have allowed us to enhance user experience in a context of heightened demand for digital transactions and services. Our quarter-over-quarter results show loan growth measured in quarter-end balances remain flat. If we isolate the negative exchange rate effect, the 4.2% uptick in structural loans were offset by an 11.2% drop in government programs portfolio. Core income, which is composed of net interest income, fee income, and FX transactions, expanded 2.9% due to growth in structural loans and a lower cost deposit mix due to seasonal transactional activity and higher FX volatility, respectively. Provision expenses dropped to exceptionally low levels this quarter, driven by improvements in payment behavior, higher recoveries of written-off loans, lower risk origination volumes, and improved GDP levels that are captured in expected loss models. This led the cost of risk to drop to 0.34%. Insurance underwriting results returned to pre-pandemic levels this quarter, driven mainly by an increase in net earning premiums in both life and property and casualty businesses, and a decrease in property and casualty claims. Expenses were higher this quarter, driven by an uptick in transformation expenses, variable compensation, and due to the usual fourth quarter expense increase seasonality. In this context, Credicorp's net income was 1,061 million soles, which represents an ROE of 16.4% at quarter end. In full year terms, core income expanded 13.8%, driven by higher net interest income, in line with an uptick in the structural portfolio, rising rates, and lower cost funding structure. Fee income gains, which were triggered by higher volumes of transactional activity, but negatively impacted by regulatory restrictions for fees, and an increase in net gains on FX transactions due to better pricing capabilities and more volatility. The cost of risk dropped 8.82% in an environment characterized by higher than expected growth in economic activity, positive payment behavior, and a reduction in the volumes of riskier portfolios. The aforementioned factors were partially offset by the negative insurance underwriting results due to higher COVID-related claims and an increase in transformation expenses. As a result, Credicorp's net income was 3,585 million soles in 2021, which reflects an ROE of 13.9%. Finally, our balance sheet remains strong with ample liquidity and adequate capital ratios. Next slide, please. We continue to advance in our sustainability journey. This quarter, MSCI informed us that our ESG rating had been elevated to the leaders category with a score of AA. This new score recognizes Credicorp's leadership in managing the most significant ESG risks and opportunities in the industry. Additionally, Credicorp was selected to form part of the S&P BVL Peru General ESG Index, a representative ESG benchmark of the Peruvian equity market. In the environmental front, we developed a sustainability financing framework that is aligned with international standards and became the first Latin bank to obtain a strong S&P rating for this kind of framework. Additionally, our subsidiaries continue to adhere to commitments to combat climate change. In this regard, it is worth noting that Credicorp Capital Asset Management became a TCFD supporter. In the social front, we have been recognized by prestigious institutions for our efforts on the financial inclusion, education, and gender equity fronts. Regarding governance, we continue to develop policies, codes, and structures that are aligned with international best practices. In the past few years, we have focused on improving our ESG disclosure. We are pleased to report that we will be publishing our 2021 annual and sustainability report, which is aligned with international sustainability reporting standards such as SASB and GRI. Next slide, please. Regarding universal banking, in the fourth quarter of 21, BCP consolidated its return to profitability. Quarter-over-quarter results were driven by an increase of 4.5% in core income. This was attributable to an uptick in structural loans, mainly through retail banking, and 7.5% growth in fee income, which was fueled by an increase in transaction volumes to new services and digital channels. This quarter, gains in FX transactions were unusually high, which reflects our ability to leverage intelligence capability in a volatile FX market. The aforementioned was offset by higher provisions, which are still at very low level. Additionally, operating expenses increased due to seasonality. In this context, return on average equity stood at 20.7% this quarter. On a full-year basis, a 9.9% growth in core income was fueled by growth in net interest income, which was driven by a 16.1% uptick in structural loans measured in quarter-end balances. Our results improved by leveraging data analytics and fine-tuned risk models to help us penetrate new SMEs subsegments and drive sales to digital channels. In fact, by year-end, digital sales represented 34% of total sales, while 71% of unsecured consumer loans were disbursed through digital channels. In addition, our efforts over the last few years to optimize our balance sheets have led to a reduction in our funding costs. Another aspect that drove full-year growth in core income was the 20% increase in fee income, which occurred despite the challenging regulatory environment and was driven by expansion in transaction volumes. Finally, in a context marked by an exceptional low cost of risk, BCP's registered an improvement in profitability despite higher personal expenses that reflect the normalization of variable compensation reduced in 2020. Also, these better results were able to offset the higher investment in digital transformation. As a result, BCP registered a return on average equity of 19.7% in 2021. By year-end, BCP's core equity tier 1 ratio stood at 11.8%, which is within internal limits. At BCP Bolivia, our risk appetite remains low in an uncertain macroeconomic environment. In this context, our delinquency rate was below 1%, one of the lowest in the market. Next slide, please. Over the last year, Yape usage has grown exponentially. At the end of 2021, total 8 million users, 54 of whom are active users that make at least one transaction per month. The Yape card is an important lever for growth in financial inclusion and is used by 38% of Yape affiliates. You can open a mobile wallet with their national identification number. Of total Yape users, 19% are SME clients. Our focus moving forward will be in capturing new users in this segment, where 90% of transactions are still made in cash. Yape is a natural conduit for financial inclusion and also brings new clients into the BCP fold. Yape's indicators for frequency of use and number of transactions continue to rise. Today, active users executed an average of 12.7 transactions a month, compared to 8.2 in December last year. Total monthly transactions reached 58 million with a transacted volume of $3.7 billion. Next slide, please. 2021 has been a year of recovery and growth for both Mibanco Peru and Colombia, and this trend accelerated in the last quarter. Regarding Mibanco Peru, the hybrid model showed signs of consolidation and it boosted commercial productivity and efficiencies. This model gave us a platform to further centralize assessment capabilities in 2021. Now we can efficiently process information on potential loan recipients from multiple sources and consequently improve the risk profile for the structured portfolio. In addition, Mibanco embraced digital channels as a conduit for cost-effective loan growth. These capabilities, coupled with economic recovery and year and end-of-year seasonality, propelled structural disbursement levels to record highs last quarter. In this context, this quarter Mibanco consolidated this recovery. The quarter-over-quarter analysis shows structural origination reached a record high and grew 5% in average daily balances, alongside yields on loans rose triggered by enhanced pricing capabilities. These positive dynamics were partially offset by an increase in cost of funds in the context of recent interest rate hikes. As a result, our net interest income grew by 2.5%. Despite mandatory fee restrictions, other income also improved in line with an uptick in bancassurance commissions, which was driven by growth in origination levels and a decrease in commissions paid to commercial partners. In this context, core income grew 4.4% quarter over quarter. Lastly, Mibanco's loan provision significantly dropped this quarter due to model adjustments, lower risk origination, and improvements in collections, which reflect the more favorable economic environment after COVID-19 restriction ceased. At Mibanco Colombia, results were driven by higher origination volumes and lower provisions. In 2021, we increased our commercial muscle and maintained productivity, thus boosting our presence in the Colombian microfinance market. Next slide, please. The insurance business has consolidated its recovery from quarter-over-quarter perspective. Grupo Pacifico's insurance underwriting results returned to pre-pandemic levels this quarter. These results were driven by solid growth in net earning premiums in both life and property and casualty businesses, and by a decrease in property and casualty claims. The aforementioned dynamics were partially offset by an increase in the net claims in the life business, driven by an increase in IBNR reserves. Our corporate health insurance and medical service businesses registered lower earnings attributable to growth in IBNR claims in corporate health insurance. This factor was partially offset by solid results in medical services, in line with increased revenues from outpatient services. All in all, Grupo Pacifico's return on equity stood at 11.8%. Finally, Prima posted a 12% net income growth quarter over quarter, driven by a recovery in the investment performance of its reserve fund. On a full year basis, Grupo Pacifico's insurance and the underwriting results ended up in negative territory after life claims rose considerably during the second wave of COVID-19. This impact was partially offset by solid earned premium growth in both life and property and casualty businesses, associated mostly with increasing premium levels from disability and survivorship insurance and the positive evolution of our digital channels. The strong performance of medical services also helped boost the consolidated results. Finally, Prima's 2021 earnings fell 1.4%, which was spurred by higher expenses to strengthen the company IT infrastructure. These investments positioned the company to handle an unprecedented level of service requests to alternative channels. Next slide, please. In 2021, regional consolidation of our investment banking and wealth management business continued to gain traction. On a quarterly basis, results were driven by 0.5% growth in assets under management measured in U.S. dollars. This evolution was triggered by 2.6% growth in wealth management, which was fueled by an uptick in brokerage fund volumes. regarding income contribution, positive results in asset and wealth management business were offset by a contraction in capital markets after negative results were reported for a fixed income proprietary portfolio due to lower gains from market operation. This led to contribution of investment banking and wealth management line of business to fall -5.6% quarter over quarter. In full year figures, assets under management registered at -7.2% contraction, mainly due to significant Peruvian mutual funds outflows, which were partially redirected to our offshore platform at lower fees, affecting long-term income generation. The expansion in income, mainly driven by asset management and wealth management, was partially attenuated by a contraction in capital markets, which led to investment banking and wealth management line of business to register growth of 8.4%. Regarding our transformation process, in 2021, we achieved significant milestones that will allow us to optimize operating processes and lay the foundation for scalability. Among these, ASB Bank Corp absorbed ASB, changing its domicile from Panama and migrating its core banking systems to the cloud. Finally, we implemented a shared service center in Colombia where we have successfully migrated over 70% of our target processes in 1 year. Next slide, please. Now, I will discuss Credicorp consolidated performance. On the asset side, from a quarter-over-quarter perspective, the asset mix became more profitable in line with a 2.7% expansion in structural loans, which was driven by retail banking and Mibanco. Year over year, structural loans grew 14.1%. This result was fueled mainly by wholesale banking, which registered growth, economic reactivation, and strong campaigns in the agricultural and fishing sectors. On the liability side, from a quarter-over-quarter perspective, growth in low-cost deposits remained flat, while all other funding sources fell by 4.9%. This allowed us to maintain a low funding cost. Year over year, it is important to highlight that low-cost deposit grew by 10.5%, while severance in payment deposits dropped 48.1%, in line with an economic relief policy that freed up these funds for withdrawal. All this led to a decrease in our funding cost, which stood at 1.24% this quarter. On a full year basis, the funding cost decreased by 49 basis points to stand at 1.29%. This was driven by the aforementioned growth in low cost deposits and by the optimization of the wholesale funding cost at BCP in a context of low interest rates. Next slide, please. This quarter, both the structural loan portfolio and payment behavior continue to evolve favorably at the credit card level. Consequently, both the structural NPL ratio and the structural cost of risk improve. Loan volumes and on-time payments remain strong in our banking businesses. This positive evolution was attributable to economic reactivation, growth in individual liquidity due to government relief, and an increased transactional activity. Additionally, NPL's balance were favored by higher write-offs, mainly from the bank. The aforementioned was partially offset by higher delinquencies in SME PYME segment, which was attributable to clients who also hold government programs loans. In this context, Credicorp's structural NPL stood at 4.9%, which represented a quarter-over-quarter reduction of 30 basis points. Provisions continue to follow a downward trend across our banking businesses, reaching record lows this quarter. This improvement was driven by positive payment behaviors, lower risk levels, and higher write-offs, mainly in the SME PYME segment and Mibanco. The aforementioned was partially offset by an increase in provisions and wholesale banking after a limited number of corporate clients advanced to higher stage of delinquency. In this scenario, Credicorp's structural cost of risk contracted for 0.54% to 0.22% quarter over quarter. On a full year basis, we have registered significant lower provision expenses in a context of better than expected economic activity, deposit payment behaviors, which reflect an uptick in clients' liquidity, a decrease in risk and the loan origination level, as loan expanded mainly to lower risk retail products. In this context, a structural cost of risk dropped from 5.12% to 0.89%. The level of restructuring allowances for loan losses at year-end was equivalent to 6.4% of Credicorp's loan portfolio. In our government program portfolio, grace periods expire and reprogramming facilities conclude. We have a healthy client base and delinquency is concentrated in early stages. Nevertheless, overdue loans in late stages of arrears are being recovered through state guarantees. Next slide, please. Credicorp's NIM continue an upward trend to stand at 4.25% this quarter, in line with a more profitable asset mix. Risk-adjusted NIM increased 9 basis points quarter over quarter to stand at 4.04%. On a full-year term, net interest income expanded 9.2% fueled by the structural loan growth, an uptick in low-cost deposits, and an optimization of wholesale funding. Core income increased 2.9% quarter over quarter, which was primarily driven by 8.1% growth in fee income. Fee income was bolstered by an uptick in consumption through POS transactions with debit cards at the establishment. It is known that growth in consumption was driven by a small establishment, which generates higher fees. Finally, net gains in FX transactions increased 12.8% quarter over quarter in a context of high FX volatility, improved pricing and distribution capabilities. On a full year basis, core income expanded 13.8%, which was primarily attributable to growth in net interest income and secondarily to an increasing fee income due to higher transactional activity. Fee income closed the year above pre-pandemic levels despite recent regulatory restrictions. Next slide, please. On full year basis, Credicorp's efficiency ratio improved 40 basis points year over year. Improvements were mainly driven by the positive evolution of operating income in the microfinance and insurance pension line of businesses. This evolution offset higher expenses at BCP standalone related to digital transformation. At Mibanco, operating income grew 19% in 2021, while operating expenses grew 5%. Expenses remain under control, which reflects in large part the inroads that Mibanco has made in consolidated its hybrid business model. Pacifico's income registered growth this year after it won two additional tranches of the Cisco 5 tender for AFP-related coverage. The premium rate for this tender was higher than the rate under Cisco 4, the previous annual program. If we exclude our investments in disruptive initiatives, such as Yape and the portfolio of Creavio, from the calculation base, the efficiency ratio stands at 44.3%, which is 160 basis points below the reported ratio. Next slide, please. Our ROE stood at pre-pandemic levels at semester end. We are at the tough end of a challenging two-year period, which was marked by a sanitary crisis and episodes of potential instability. We managed the risk and arose by leveraging our strong balance sheet and took advantage of opportunities to emerge with a strengthened competitive position. First, we decided to accelerate digital investments through the crisis and have leveraged capabilities to penetrate new segments as we consolidate our market leadership. Over the past 2 years, our structural loan portfolio grew 11.5%. During the same period, we reported northward expansion of 66.6% in our low-cost deposit base. This, coupled with adequate management of wholesale funding in a context of favorable interest rate, will provide a funding cost advantage as we move into a cycle of interest rate hikes. Second, we steer our loan portfolio towards a better risk profile by enhancing our underwriting models and shifting some products from revolving to non-revolving facilities in both the SME and consumer segments. Third, we optimize fee income by leveraging price intelligence and focusing on building transaction capabilities. Through Yapi alone, the number of monthly transactions rose by 20-fold in the last 2 years. Fourth, although our insurance business was severely hit, we laid the foundations to increase profitability by strengthening our digital and bancassurance channel, developing business at the base of the pyramid, and refining our pricing and risk models. Finally, we accelerated investments and revisited our operating models to improve efficiency. Mibanco's consolidation of its hybrid model is already showing tangible results in this front. We will capitalize on our fortified competitive positions to 2022 and beyond. Next slide, please. Against this backdrop, we share the following expectation for 2022. Assuming that the current COVID-19 wave will have a limited and transitory impact on economic activity, we expect Peru's GDP to grow around 2.5%. In terms of our loan portfolio, we expect lending activity to follow dynamics similar to those seen currently. In this context, we expect our structured loan portfolio, which excludes Reactiva loans, to grow between 8 and 10% in average daily balances. The evolution in total loans will depend on the pace at which Reactiva balances are amortized. Regarding NIM, we expect interest rates to continue their upward trajectory as our loan book shifts more towards retail. Accordingly, we expect NIM to situate between 4.3% and 4.6%. We anticipate that the cost of risk will fluctuate between 0.8% and 1.1% as positive payment trends continue and we leverage our enhanced intelligence capabilities. In 2022, we will continue to invest heavily in our disruptive ecosystem. As such, we expect our efficiency ratio to stand between 45 and 48%. It is important to note that we estimate that disruptive expenses will impact the efficiency ratio by around 300 basis points. We expect our insurance underwriting results to end the year slightly above pre-pandemic levels, provided that no additional material impacts from the sanitary situation arise. As a result, we expect our ROE to be situated between 15.5 and 17.5%. This improved prospect for profitability will allow us to continue doubling down on transformation investments and increase dividend payouts. With this comment, I would like to start the Q&A session.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star then one on your telephone keypad. If you have connected to the call using the HD web phone on your computer, please use the keypad on your computer screen. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone the opportunity for questions. We also ask that you please only ask one question at a time. After each question has been addressed by our speakers, you will then be allowed to ask as many follow-ups as needed. But again, please only ask one question at a time. Thank you. And the first question today will come from Ernesto Gabilondo with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Gianfranco and Cesar. Good morning to all your team, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity to take questions. My first question is on your net interest margin. I would like to understand the potential drivers behind the NIM expansion for this year, like higher rates, or how much additional hikes are you expecting? I don't know, an increased exposure from retail loans and Mibanco, and maybe some amortizations in the Reactiva loan. So anything that you can give us on NIM expectations, I think, will be helpful.
Sorry, Ernesto, I wasn't mute. This is Gianfranco. Good morning. Maybe Cesar can take this one, but go ahead, Cesar, and I'll make some closing remarks.
Yes. Thank you, Gianfranco. I think, as I mentioned previously, I think we are going to have several forces at the same time. We are going to have a backdrop of increased interest rate. We have had a significant increase during 2021, 275 basis points, and we expect that this trend to continue, probably with additional 100 additional basis points through the year. This is going to be translated gradually to a higher nominal interest rates in our portfolio, coupled with an increase in cost of funds, particularly in Mibanco. As a result, we expect an increasing net margin driven by this underlying trend and a gradual transition to more retail portfolio. We need to consider also that during 2020 and 2021, we have been originated lower risk, lower yield loans. So we need to gradually increase the rates, reflecting a more normal portfolio to the 2022.
Thank you very much, Cesar. And just my second question is on operating expenses. As you mentioned in your remarks, you're expecting to do digital investments this year. So how should we think about the OPEX growth? I think last year was around 16%. Should we expect a similar growth this year? And considering next year's, when do you expect this OPEX growth to normalize? I don't know if it would be reasonable to expect the OPEX growth more in line inflation in the next years.
Thank you. I think first it's important to understand the dynamics of the 2022. And I would like to emphasize that in 2022, we have the impact of significant higher operating volumes that carries additional costs. We expect this trend to continue. In 2022, we also normalize the variable compensation that was severely curtailed during 2020. And this trend is going to continue based on top line and bottom line results in our main businesses. And the other factor that I think is going to make that our expenses are going to grow certainly more than inflation is that we are accompanying the increasing volumes in different channels with a significant additional expenses in transformation investments. So, as I mentioned previously, the impact in cost to income is going to almost double considering the marginal investments that we expect in transformation initiatives. So we are going to maintain a good control of the cost to income ratio, but we are going to experience still a growth in expenses above inflation.
And this, I understand perfectly this year, but thinking more about the medium term, like for the next years, should we continue to have this same pace of growth, or next year should be, again, going back to growth in line with inflation?
First, I think our expenses shouldn't grow in line with expansion, but in line with the volume of business and operational efficiencies. We expect to have a significant additional investments in transformation initiatives for at least 2-3 years. And after that, we are going to see less impact of these additional expenses and more clearly the positive impact of the income that these investments bring to the book.
Okay, perfect. Ernesto,
maybe just to add on what Cesar mentioned, I would say that we have to separate into the expenses account. One is the one that is related to growth. And as Cesar mentioned before, the number of transactions and activity that we have seen through 2021, I would say that it's going to keep up. This is part of the strategy we started, 5-7 years ago, the war on cash strategy that has grown a lot because of, for obvious reasons, which is the pandemic. That trend should continue, but obviously that growth in expenses, is highly correlated to the growth in income and fee income, basically. The other part is the investments we're doing on the digital transformation and on new ventures. And even though I believe we have an aggressive plan there, which we will share with you in March, obviously that's a stage-gated kind of investment. As far as as the investments go well, we will keep investing. Obviously, they don't perform the way we expect for them to perform, we will reduce investment or even shut down those ventures.
Perfect. Thank you, Gianfranco.
Thank you. And the next question will come from Jason Molin with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hello. My question really is a follow-up on part of the first questions, which is on expenses and efficiency. In particular, the digital transformation and the hybrid model. I mean, how are you viewing the ability of the bank and the group to really bring, let's call it, the non-physical network expenses, how to incorporate those even more, and how we should see, like, is that really going to be still negatively impacting for multi-years, this investment in digital transformation? And if you can repeat the medium and long-term efficiency ratio targets. Thank you.
Francesca, could you answer the part on the digital investments?
Maybe you could give a sense of, like, in 2022 and 2023, are we going to see similar levels that we saw in 2021 and 20? Should they be trending down, up? How should we think about those, and how they, you mentioned the growth portion of expenses increasing and the digital transformation. Maybe you can give us a sense of what corresponds to each portion.
Okay, I'll share the view in terms of our strategic intent, and then Cesar will probably complement me in terms of the cost. The way we are viewing our transformation toward a non-physical channel is by expanding our customer base in the retail and in the SME business. And we are approaching this on a customer journey type of view, which is first acquire the customer and then continue with their transaction, the daily transaction, and then their next product sale related to cross-selling and a good solid relationship. Therefore, this is a multi-year journey, and we are beginning to analyze and to control the multi-channel kind of view. So we start directing customers towards only non-physical channels and to have a better service level around that.
Maybe just to complement that, before goes into the details, Jason, a concrete example of what can be achieved is what's going on in Mibanco. In Mibanco, we are in the process of deploying the hybrid model. And the last quarter, we got record level in terms of sales month by month with roughly 15% of less sales force. And that's because we are leveraging on the digital investments we've done in the past at Mibanco. So that's a kind of example of what we're trying to achieve. Obviously, there are some investments that are more clear in terms of the results, the short-term results, where there are others that will be longer tenor, that are being done with a longer-term view. Go ahead,
maybe I can compliment Gianfranco. This is Diego Cabero. We have been very successful in Banco de Crédito in migrating, actually helped by the by the COVID-19 reality, in migrating transactions from the physical to the digital networks. Okay, so transactions in the branches. They used to be 7% of the total transactions of BCP, the monetary transactions. As of today, they are only 2%. And the number has reduced from 7 million or something to 4 point something million of transactions, monetary transactions. While at the same time, the digital channels have blown out, no, that has grown more than two times. So now we have to work actually in continuing this migration, not only in transactions but also in sales and services, no, and that will be much more efficient in the future.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. And the next question will be from Tito Labarta with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. My first question is on your cost of risk. You show guidance between 0.8 to 1.1, you know, increasing a bit from 2021, but, you know, well below historical levels. If you can give a little bit more color on that in terms of your expectations for asset quality, you know, does this imply your coverage will come down at all? And, you know, beyond 2022, do you expect this to normalize back closer to the historical levels, closer to, you know, 1.8 to 2%? So if you can give some more color on that. Thank you.
Yes,
Tito, regarding this year's expectations, I would say it's a mix of the high level of provision we made in 2020 and also the good performance in all portfolios in every market we've been watching in 2021. So I would say this year we will continue seeing good results based on those two factors. Regarding the future, probably these numbers will start rising a little bit and starting 2023, getting close to pre-COVID levels. That's our expectation as of today.
Okay, thank you for that. Just one follow-up there. On the coverage ratio, do you see that, you know, it's around 115%? Do you think that would come down a bit this year or kind of keep it around those levels?
Well, we, as in all metrics, we have a different approach in terms of the structural numbers and the total numbers. This 115 includes the government loans, and those numbers are probably going to be impacted. But there we have, as you know, a big coverage of state guarantees. So we don't look that number very closely. And the number we have in terms of coverage as of December 2021 of 132%, it is still above what we had in 2019. And I think we feel comfortable with that number. It might go down a little bit in 2022, but it's still at pretty good and sound levels.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you for that. And then my second question is on your digital initiatives, particularly Yape. You show, you know, over 8 million clients, a little bit more than half are active. Can you provide maybe some more color on your expectations for, you know, how does that client base grow from here? What are, you know, what percentage of those clients are BCP clients versus non-BCP clients? And if you have any other metrics that you can give, like, you know, what's the average revenue per client, you know, any loans from Yape, deposits, any unit economics or, you know, numbers that you can help us quantify how Yape should grow?
Francesca, can you get that one?
I'll take it. Yes. You know, I'll take that question. But about a third of the customers for Yape are non-BCP customers. And what we are continually doing is finding new ways to monetize them more than just transactions in terms of the P2P or the P2M model. We are beginning to see a very high transaction rate in terms of pop-ups, which is top-ups for cell phones. Mm-hmm. And we are going to begin distributing for the lower end of the segment that is highly transactional. We're also moving towards a more of a super app type of view, where we think we can deliver high-value products on the lower end of the scale for retail in terms of access to good quality products for a lower end segment of the retail market.
All right. Thanks for that. And anything that you can give on, like, you know, revenues per client or loans per client or deposits and how you think that would evolve?
Not at the current time, because this is something that we are beginning to view in terms of monetization per customer. Today, we've been focused on growth and growing the customer base and having a lot of transactions, having active customers. So during 2022, we will be seeing those metrics.
Okay, thank you very much.
Tito, actually, this is Gianfranco. Actually, we are organizing a specific digital day. I believe it's March 15th in New York. So you're more than, all of you, more than invited to attend. And we will be much more specific on other issues also, but obviously on Japan.
Great. Thanks, Gianfranco. Yeah, hope to be there. See you there.
Thank you. And the next question will be from Olavo Arthuzo with UBS. Please go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for taking my question. I wanted to hear from you about the strategy with the subsidiaries of the group. I mean, after 2020, the ROE of BCP standalone basically returned to the 20s ratio, while some operations like BCP Bolivia, Pacifico, Credit Core Capital are still lagging behind with the profitability well below the cost of capital of these operations. So I basically wanted to understand what is the bank strategy for these subsidiaries? I mean, what is the plan to foster these operations for the next few years, or even the case of an M&A. I don't know if this is in the case, but is in the bank's pipeline a potential divestment? Thank you very much.
This is Gianfranco. We didn't get the first part of your statement / question. Could you repeat that one? Because at least I didn't get it.
Yes, no problem. I just wanted to know, to have some more color about the expectations of yours for the next years about the subsidiary of the group, like BCP Bolivia, Pacifico, Credit Corp, because they are delivering a profitability well below the cost of capital of these operations. So I wanted to hear from you what is basically actual plans for the next few years to show potential rebound on these operations, or I don't know if this is the case, but if it is in the bank's pipeline, a potential divestment from this operation. I don't know if you understood me clear. I can repeat it.
Yes, thank you. That is clear. I'll take that one. Actually, what we foresee is that all of our subsidiaries will be above cost of capital by year end this year, with the exception of obviously the digital ventures and Bolivia. Bolivia, I don't know how much aware you are about Bolivia, but Bolivia, the business environment is quite complicated, and the banking environment specifically is quite complicated. I would say much more complicated than the business environment in general. Having said that, we've been in Bolivia for the last over the last 25 years. We do believe that we have a strong franchise there. What we're doing is trying to become much more efficient and hoping to better friends to come into Bolivia. And obviously, in that unfriendly environment, it's quite complicated to do a transaction, a merger, an acquisition, or sell the subsidiary because of environment. So that's where we stand today.
Okay, very, very clear. And now, if I may pose my second question, it's very quick. It's about the payout ratio for this year. So given the profitability rebound shown the last year and expectations implied in the guidance for this year, what could we expect about the dividend distribution for this year?
Are you talking about dividends? Sorry, but the connection is quite bad.
Yes, sorry. It could be from my side. Gianfranco, I will repeat that very, very quick. It's about the payout ratio for this year. You show that okay.
I got it. Thank you. We cannot provide a payout ratio as of today. What we've told the market always, and this is the policy we have, is that what we do is we, based on the budget of growth specifically on the banks, we set up the capital requirements for sustaining that growth. After that, the excess profits we get from the subsidiaries, if there are no important M&A transactions inside, what we do is pay dividends. The dividend announcement should be stated by the board. I really don't remember if it's February or April. Cesar, you can help me with that.
April.
So in April, and then we will make it public. But I would think that what is important is the philosophy and the policy we have around dividend and payout ratios.
Okay. Thank you very much, Gianfranco. Very clear.
Thank you. And the next question will be from Andres Soto with Santander. Please go ahead.
Good morning to all, and thank you for the opportunity to ask questions. Maybe a follow-up on that last response. Gianfranco, you said your dividend payout will depend on the capital levels at the subsidiary levels, and you will plan to distribute any excess of that. What are those minimum thresholds that you have set for your subsidiaries for dividend for the purpose of distributing dividends to the parent company and from the parent company to the shareholders?
Sure. Cesar, can you take that one, please?
Yes. Yes. I think that the main restrictions came from the banks. In the case of BCP, is a core equity tier one of around 11% at the minimum point, that is the declaration of the dividend. In the case of Mibanco, Peru and Mibanco Colombia is 15%, and there's the same rules. And for this year, we are maintaining the profits in some vehicles in particular, like Pacifico, who has endured some losses. That's the basic rules. And according to what Gianfranco mentioned, we reserve funds for M&A expectations, the Crealo projects, and the rest is going to be paid as dividends. And our expectation is to have a sustainable and increased dividend declared at the beginning of the year.
Thank you, Cesar. And can you remind us what is the size of that fund that you had said as a rainy day fund and also for M&A purposes? How much is that? In the past, it used to be 800 million.
Yes.
Is it still that level?
At this point, we have in liquid funds all the amount that we raised from the bond issue during the crisis. This is the $500 million. And above that, we are going to maintain some additional excess liquidity, but I will say a relatively small amount, not in the vicinity of the 2 billion soles that we had in 2019. If you see our balance sheet, you are going to see a lot of cash, but we also have the bond. And we have all the position as a reserve, and that one we are considering some liability management operations down the road.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Cesar.
Thank you. The next question will be from George Friedman from Citi. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my question. I have two questions. The first one related to the prospects for your credit growth this year. You are highlighting in the presentation that you expect loan growth in the structural portfolio to be at about 8 to 10%, but with a real GDP of only 2.5%. Last year, GDP grew 13%, and of course, you departed from a higher basis, but you know, the portfolio grew only 3%, is slightly below that. So how do you believe you can achieve these levels of growth in light of the deceleration in the economy? And what would be the drivers for that, and whether, I know, competition might get more intense or not? Thank you.
Maybe Diego. Diego, can you take that one on BCP and I'll complement you, Banco?
Yes, yes, for sure. Actually, we have to separate the loan portfolio when you include the Reactiva government-backed portfolio, no? We expect that portfolio, including Reactiva, is not going to grow that much, and the opportunity is to substitute those loans that are going to be repaid this year, no? So we see a great opportunity in the PYME segment, especially, that portfolio is going to be amortized, and we are going to substitute a relevant part of that portfolio with higher margins. And also, we expect strong demand in the mortgages and in the consumer segment, because what we are seeing is that levels are getting up to pre-COVID levels, no, in terms of the size of portfolio. So most of the growth comes from recovery to pre-COVID levels, but a relevant part comes from substituting the reactive portfolio.
Just to complement Diego's comment, at Mibanco, as I mentioned before, the last quarter, there's a seasonality at Mibanco, but last quarter was a record quarter, historic record quarter. We expect the microfinance and SME businesses to keep growing. That was those were the segments that were hit the most along the COVID crisis. We are seeing a lot of activity there. So that will complement also what Diego just mentioned.
Perfect. And just a follow-up there. How much do you think Mibanco could represent in terms of total loans? It represents approximately 10% of the total portfolio nowadays. Not sure if you have an ambition of having a bigger participation of Mibanco in the future.
The answer is yes, but it's in the long run. We strongly believe that one of the main avenues for growth of Credicorp is growing in microfinance. Not necessarily only in Peru, but also in Colombia, where we are operating today. Still a tiny operation, but we're very, very happy with the results of that operation. So we may be quite active in other countries in LATAM in the upcoming years.
Oh, perfect. And my second question, very quickly, is on the effective tax rate. We had some volatility of effective tax rates during the past quarters. So just wondering, to come up with your guidance, what you are envisioning for the effective tax rate in 2022. Thank you.
Yes. As you mentioned, we have had a lot of volatility during last year. At some point, we reached 4.14 soles per dollar. At year end, we were around 4 now. With all the volatility, we are in 384. We think that we are going to be around these figures that are below that was our expectation only a couple of months ago. But I think at this moment we are to have two counterforces: the
political risk with upward pressure and a significant balance surplus in the commercial front as a positive and downward pressure. The combination of both suggests us that we are going to be around these levels.
Sorry, which levels? I missed that part.
We are now at 384 in this vicinity.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question will come from Alonso Garcia with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking my question. It's actually a follow-up on the margin side. If you could remind us of your sensitivity to every 100 basis points increase in the Peruvian interest rate. And second, I mean, you mentioned the press release that you see some pricing pressure in the quarter, affecting especially the wholesale portfolio. So I just wanted to hear from you if you continue to see that pressure on pricing for 2022 in the wholesale segment, and if you are starting to see this kind of pressure also in other segments of the portfolio. Thank you.
So,
maybe I can take that one. Yes.
Oh, sorry.
We are seeing a lot of competition.
Yes, we have a sensibility of the portfolio that implies around 7 basis points in NIM. Let's say if we increase the rates in a parallel movement, it's a little bit below 200 million soles at this point, assuming a parallel move in the curves. And as you imagine, this is an accumulative effect over the years. That's the sensibility of our portfolio. We are seeing a gradual translation in the interest rates in the wholesale portfolio with pressures, but we are seeing the translation on higher interest rates. And we foresee some delay in the translation on the higher rates of the consumer portfolio, the revolving lines. This is going to happen, but with some delay. That's what traditionally happens with our portfolio. The decrease is with some delay, and the increase is also with some delays in the higher rates and revolving lines. So through the year, we are going to be the gradual translation of the increase in interest rate that we are seeing right now.
So just to clarify, 7 basis points plus 7 basis points for every 100 basis points increase, correct?
In NIM.
Yes.
The sensibility is in NIM.
Yeah.
Basis points in NIM, yes.
Yeah. Positive for every 100 basis points increase.
Yes, parallel movements.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Thank you. And the next question will be from Yuri Fernandez with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity of asking questions. I have a follow-up on margins on this repricing topic. If you can provide some color on Reactiva lines for the guys that are expiring, are you able to move the price to the normal average, like to the historical pre-COVID levels, or are you facing some kind of resistance from clients to, you know, move prices up again? And I guess my point here is to try to understand your NIM expansion, right? Because you are guiding for 20 to 50 bps NIM expansion this year. And basically my question is regarding 2023, right? So if we should expect your NIMs to keep evolving 20 to 50 bps every year, so maybe by 2023, 2024, we may see margins back again to those 5.5% levels. And I guess repricing here on Reactiva is important to understand that pace, right? If you'll be able to reach that faster, or it will take some more time. And I can ask another question later. Thank you.
Sure. I'll take that one. Yuri, great question, because it helps us in a follow-up on what we mentioned in the last call. We've already seen, I believe it's close to 25% of what we disbursed in Reactiva has already been repaid.
that's one important piece of information. The other one is that specifically, especially at Mibanco, where the difference in rates of the guarantee rates as compared to the traditional loan rates was important, was large, we've seen already a lot of activity, as I mentioned, the last quarter, and we haven't seen any negative impact in terms of the willingness of those clients to get their new loans at market conditions. So we really do not expect any noise going forward. And obviously, as the further we move in the year, the more of the Reactiva loans will be repaid, and we should be back into normal by year end. And maybe, I don't know, anything between 25% to 35% of the total Reactiva loans have been refinanced, and that will trickle down as we move forward. So in the second part of your question, we do expect NIMs to go back to normal because of the reasons Cesar mentioned before, and I'll be a little bit more specific in my final remarks.
No, super yes. Clear. Thank you.
Sorry to complement what Gianfranco is exactly what he says. The only thing that I want to remember you is that the cumulative effect of the increases rates over time, because you reprice the portfolio gradually, so we will see an increase in top line interest rates for a couple of years very clearly as the portfolio reprices.
That's super clear, Cesar and Juan Franco. Super clear. Can I just ask on fees? We discussed expenses, NII, margins, but fees are missing. So my question is, should we expect fees to grow more or less regarding, like, similar to our loan growth? Just checking the pace of fee growth, because this year, as you said, was a normalization for volumes and fees grew 20%. But I'm not sure how fast can fees grow in 2022. Thank you.
Go ahead, Cesar.
Yes. I would like to remember that during 2020, we have almost 114 on something days of severely restricted level of activity in the country. So the transactional volumes dropped significantly. In this regard, the figures that you see in 2021 are a reflection of the recovery of these volumes of activity and transactional coupled with increased capabilities, distribution capabilities we have developed. So we are not going to see this kind of additional rebounds down the road, but we see that the fee income probably are going to grow a little bit faster than before the pandemic, in which we're very low, at very low single digits, propelled by our increased transactional capabilities, but not a repetition of the 2021 that is a rebound from exceptionally low levels at the beginning of 2020.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the next question will come from Carlos Gomez with HSBC New York. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. You refer to the reduction in fees from asset management because of outflows from mutual funds in Peru and the fact that some of this money has gone to offshore accounts. Can you quantify that, and can you tell us if that has continued? And when I say quantify, can you tell us how much the funds would be charging in Peru and how much they would be charging in your offshore capabilities? And I know it's only one question, but I noticed that we are getting to the end and nobody has asked you about politics, and you don't have a government. What do you expect from the public sector? And again, in the past, we have talked about macro stability and muddling through. Is that still your scenario for the next 3 years? Thank you so much.
Good morning, Carlos. I'll start with the second part of your second question. And actually, I'm surprised you're making that question because we're in a very stable political and macroeconomic country. Actually, the level of uncertainty is very high. We have, as a matter of fact, we don't have a prime minister as we speak today.
There's been a lot of noise. There's no clarity whatsoever on the next cabinet is gonna be, and therefore what the roadmap of this government going forward is gonna be. Which is a pity, because as a country, on the macro side, as Cesar mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, we are having tailwinds. The level of commodity prices, specifically copper, is at basically at record levels. We are at record levels of production. Therefore, both the fiscal deficit, the commercial balance, and so on have been very positive last year, and so we could be growing instead of 2.5% this year at maybe double that number. And what is more important, and I believe I made this comment before, what is more important is that at 2.5% of GDP growth, the level of poverty is not reduced, whereas at 5% or more, the level of poverty is reduced. Therefore, the social impact of that growth is much more relevant. I don't know if I got the second part of your question. Sorry for not being more specific, but that's where we stand today. Maybe Cesar, you can answer the first one. First part, sorry.
Yes. As you mentioned, Carlos, we have a severe impact during the election period, and we lost almost 50% of the mutual funds in Peru. This is more than $2 billion equivalent of funds that were withdrawn. And we have captured significant part of this in our international platforms. But we have exchanged our 100 basis points fee for a quarter of that in a non-proprietary distribution fee that we can collect in the international platform. So we have an impact in this regard. And I would also to highlight that at the beginning of the process, the P&L impact was muted because we charge early withdrawal fees or load fees. But down the road, we have a less profitable base that we need to rebuild. But the impact has been relevant.
And has the outflow continued into this year?
No. No, we monitor carefully the outflows from different funds, the transference from different vehicles to outside. And in the last month and a half, I say the figures are pretty small or even positive in specific weeks.
Okay. Thank you. And if I can follow up on the politics, do you expect this administration to continue for the next 3 years, and do you expect any legislative changes that could affect the bank, or do you just want to know?
Unfortunately, I do not have a crystal ball.
Neither do we. Thank you so much.
The next question will be from Fergie Dubin with Harding Loebner. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for the call. I have a question and just confirm some facts. So the first fact I want to confirm is, what is the percentage of Reactiva loans as a percentage of your total loans today?
Okay.
Do you have it?
Yes.
It's around 13%.
Okay. So it's 13%, and you expect that to decline to roughly what level by the end of 2022?
That should be around maybe 8%. This is a rough number. I don't know, Cesar, if you have the exact number, the expectations. That should be maybe to 8%.
We don't have 8%. Specific program, we should have a reduction of around half. Only a small precision, 13% is Mibanco, in BCP is slightly higher, between 14 and 18%, depending of retail or wholesale.
Yeah, I'm talking about the consolidated level right now. So roughly speaking, from 13 to 8, correct?
Yes,
roughly, yes.
Okay. So
just to be very specific, unless there's a change in the regulatory conditions by the government. But as of today, that's the expectation. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, got it. So given that, and given all that you talked about with respect to the rates already, so if I look at the chart on page 5 that you showed, right? So you showed that the rates went from, even from September 21 to January 22, they went from 1% to 3%. So that's an increase of 200 bips. And you said there's potential for another 100 bips increase this year. So cumulative, you're looking at 300 basis points of cumulative increase over the course of, call it 18 months or so. So help me understand, I know you talked about the sensitivity of 7 bips of NIM expansion to your 200 bips in rates, but qualitatively, I'm not sure I understand why is it so low, because you have 60% of your deposits is basically low cost, what I would call CASA deposits, right? And a big chunk of your loan book is corporate loans, which should reprice fairly quickly. So why don't you have higher interest rate sensitivity, and why don't you have higher NIM expansion?
Okay, probably I can take that. I think two different stories. In the case of Mibanco, most of the funding of Mibanco is a wholesale funding, and the part that is retail funding has also a relatively high sensitivity. So the expansion in Mibanco is moderate, and this is part of the answer. In the case of BCP, we have two portfolios. The dollar portfolio has going to have an increase, but much more muted, and we have a significant part of the portfolio in dollars at BCP, as you can remember, around 40%. The other part is in soles, and in the soles portfolio, we have a duration of 2.2 years, so we are going to see the full impact in 2023. I don't know if I am clear. You have Mibanco that has less sensibility due to the funding structure. In the case of BCP, you have dollar portfolio that is not going to have 200 basis points increase, and you have the solar portfolio. And the solar portfolio has a duration of 2.2%. So gradually we are going to pass through this interest rate, and it's going to be a lag in the high rates and revolving portfolios, in which you don't have the rates gradually, but in chunks, quarter by quarter and gradually over time. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, that's actually a very good insight, and I wish you articulated that up front, because I don't think it was very clear, but now it is clear. Just one follow-up question. So when you talked about dollar portfolio and BCP, first of all, what's the duration of that dollar portfolio? And second, basically that portfolio is repricing not with SOLAS rates, right, but with U.S. What is it like? What kind of a benchmark is that, LIBOR, or what is it tied to, and how does it reprice? Thanks.
Okay. The duration of the dollar portfolio is shorter. Most of the rates are fixed, but are fixed at the beginning based on a LIBOR reference that is going to migrate to SOFR as we speak.
So it is tied to LIBOR, right, and it's shorter duration?
Yes.
Okay. Understand. Okay, that's very clear now. Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question will be from Alonzo Aramburu with BTG. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. Thank you for the call. I wanted to follow up on expenses. It seems like the guidance on efficiency implies somewhere around double-digit growth of expenses. You had mentioned last year some initiatives like going to a hybrid labor force, reduction with reduction of office space, and reduction of the physical network as well. I mean, where do you stand in those initiatives, and are you counting on those to help on the efficiency side this year?
That's what? Can you take it? Or Diego, I don't know. Whoever. Go ahead, Cesar.
Okay. As we mentioned previously, we are working in the reduction of the footprint. But when we reduce the footprint, as we mentioned before, we have at least three basic components. One is the strictly linked to the basic infrastructure, and this is already taken out directly. Another third approximately comes from central services that goes with the client. And at the beginning, what we are doing is very, very careful not to reducing selling capabilities. So we redistribute in the surrounding areas with a lot of models and monitor that we don't lose a distribution capability. So this is a factor. And as we mentioned before, the traditional expenses are growing slowly, but in line with transactional activity, we are spending more in IT, significantly more. And the other factor that Gianfranco also explained clearly was the transformational ones that we need to see in another part.
Okay, so the net benefit from these reductions of office space and physical footprint is not significant, I mean, at least in the short term. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's correct. Okay.
Yeah, and then can I ask a second question? Okay, can I ask a second question about Yape? I believe you were planning on offering microloans. Can you comment on where you stand in that plan?
Francesca?
Sorry, can you repeat the question on microloans?
Yes, through Yape.
Okay. So what we're planning to do for the couple next two quarters is to begin using BCP's analytical models and use Yape as a distribution channel to understand the type of loan, the amount of loan, the duration of the loan, the type of customer that will prefer this type of channel, and to begin to understand the business model around Yape as a distribution channel.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our question and answer session. I would now like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Gianfranco Ferrari, Chief Executive Officer, for closing remarks.
Thank you. As predicted in previous meetings and calls, at the end of 2021, we consolidated our return to pre-pandemic profitability levels after 2 years of unprecedented challenges. We're in the process of closing this chapter with a firm belief that we have adequately managed risks and fine-tuned our capacities to seize potential growth and profitability in all of our businesses. I am convinced that by following our purpose and reaffirming our strategy with a clear focus on digital transformation and sustainability, we have effectively steered our business through choppy waters. Moving forward, uncertainty will continue on the sanitary, macroeconomic, and political fronts, and will continue to manage each as adeptly as we have in the past. This said, there's one point that we mustn't lose sight of. Our fundamentals remain strong. As you have seen in our guidance, we see 2022 as a transition year in which cost of risk will remain low in comparison to pre-COVID levels, but will gear back to normal by 2023. During this transition, we expect NIM to recover for several reasons. First, an increase in reference rates in line with central bank trends worldwide. Also, a reduction in government-sponsored loans. And finally, an increase in retail and local currency loans. Similar to the profitability levels shown in the last two quarters of 2021, we expect to maintain a sustained ROE in the high teens in the long run.
To make this possible, we will continue investing in digitalizing our traditional businesses and in disrupting ventures. At Credit Corp, we see beyond our regional context. We have also set our sights on the global megatrends for consumer behavior and new technologies that offer unparalleled opportunities in the medium term to provide better products and services more efficiently, and more importantly, to drive financial inclusion in our underserved markets. At the onset of the pandemic, we were quick to reaffirm our digital strategy and accelerated our investments on this front. Over the past semester, we have closely examined Credit Corp's innovation model and reviewed its governance to strengthen our capacities to develop disruptive ventures. If we combine the agility and technology of these ventures with the competitive advantages of our core businesses, we will strengthen Credit Corp's leadership. We will share this journey and our new vision of innovation management at our Investor Digital Day, which we will be hosting on March 15th in New York and March 16th in London. I would like to invite you all to this event. It will really be a pleasure to see you all again. Finally, I would like to take the opportunity to share with you that after 26 years at BCP and the last four as CEO, I am thrilled and motivated to assume the leadership of Credit Corp as I work hand-in-hand with our top-notch team. Our passion for innovation, focus on clients, and most of all, our commitment to the countries where we operate, we direct our efforts to fulfill our purpose, to contribute to improving lives by accelerating the changes that our countries need. Thank you very much.
And thank you, sir. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This now concludes today's presentation. You may now disconnect. Take care.